How can we offer a response to the cares and concerns of our day with love? Hello and welcome to the God Story Podcast. I'm Brent Siddle, and our very special guest on the show this time is author Felicia Murrell. Felicia Murrell, who's just published a new book with Whitaker House in the States called And, The Restorative Power of Love in an Either-Or World. Now, Felicia is a certified master life coach and former ordained pastor with over 20 years of church leadership experience. She also serves the publishing industry as a freelance copy editor, and I'm delighted by the book, and I'm delighted to talk to Felicia. Hi, Felicia. Welcome from the States.
Thanks for having me, Brent. I'm so glad to be with you.
Oh, it's an honor to have you with us. Thank you so much. Now, you write, I think it's almost in your very first sentence, you write, I exist to love. Now, I love that. Why is that? Why do we all, in fact, exist to love?
Yeah, I think there's so much loaded to that, actually. And I think a lot of it is because so much of our identities are tied to productivity, and productivity is so heavily invested and tied to capitalism. And capitalism cannot exist without hierarchy. And so when you start unraveling yourselves from productivity and the enmeshment of ambition and hierarchy and comparing and measuring, what do you get? What ends up at the core of yourself? And for me, what I discovered at the core was love. And so I exist to love. And what I've come to understand is that my life will take on many different roles and functions. You've named a couple of them that I have worked in and do work in vocationally, but all of those are roles and functions that essentially are vehicles for me to love, for me to participate with divine love. So I exist just like I am, and primarily I exist to love. So that's my credo for life.
I found your account of your early years very, very moving indeed. And you write at one point, I never questioned the world in which I grew up. Now, why was that?
Why did I not question it? Because we were raised in the South, where you said little and you did what you were told and you did not question it. So questions and curiosity were often squelched, and probably primarily for safety. I imagine that a lot of the generational trauma for Black American Southerners was that you try to be as small and invisible as possible so that you stay alive. And I think what older generations did was pass that on in the ways that they nurtured and parented and shepherded to make sure that you survived. And so I wasn't necessarily raised with that, with the freedom to ask questions, the freedom to be curious in that way. So it's a daily wrestle, actually, still to be curious and to ask questions and to know that that's okay.
Can I ask you this? Can you ask why now in the South, in the States?
Yes. Why now?
Can you ask that question, why now?
Oh,
in 2024?
Yes. Yes, that's a big question. Oh, and I mean, I have an answer. I honestly think that in a lot of ways, behavior modification has failed the American South. It has failed America as a whole. And what I mean by that is, you know, I'm grateful for the civil rights movement and all that happened and all the legislation. But I think in the process of legislation changing, hearts did not change. Mm-hmm. And so what you have is generations of men and women who have some bitterness and have some anger and have some resentment towards being made to open their businesses to people they did not want to serve, to have a sense of equality that they did not feel people deserved. And so when you move into politics and you get a leader who is anti anything other than making money, it gives voice for all of that to rise again. It gives a place for it to come out of the closets. You know, I grew up in the late 70s and early 80s, and I remember vividly the Ku Klux Klan. I remember, you know, white robes and hoods, and I remember when they went to the back of closets. That's not to say that they were thrown away or that people had remorse about that lifestyle. It's just that it was no longer socially acceptable. And now we're in a season where that it's become acceptable again.
Yes, I think you write at one point in the book, and it shocked me deeply, that if you were an African-American person in the South in those days, when a white person came towards you on the pavement, you stepped off the pavement.
Yes. And
that is deeply shocking.
Yeah. Well, that was very normal for the South that, you know, I definitely know that it comes from enslavement. You did not look white people in the eye. You allowed them the privilege of going first. You stepped out of the way. And so those things were just taught for a long time. I really do think that they are ingrained in a lot of our elders' muscle memory. And when you're raised by elderly people that don't talk about their past, but they still live it in their bones, you also, you know, more is caught than taught. And so you pick up those kinds of ways.
Yeah. How has your past formed the person you are today, though?
Oh, that's a question, isn't it? I think the past forms a lot of who I am today, because a lot of who I am today is in honor of my ancestors, is in honor of that. But it's also in honor of the healing that they were not allowed to have. And so I get to stand in the freedom and the spacious capacity to heal and to be expansive and inclusive and affirming and to be led by love and not fear.
Is healing possible without justice?
Oh, that depends on what your picture of justice is.
Mm.
I think that justice is right alignment. And I think that all healing is justice. I think the two are entwined. So I go back to, you know, eliminating the binaries and eliminating dualities and hold it all together. And is there one without the other?
Yes, well, let's come on to talk about that, because the book is called And, The Restorative Power of Love in an Either-Or World. Why do we live, you and I were just talking about this before the interview started properly, why do we live in an either-or world? And it is very much, it feels to me, as no doubt it does to you, as though it is an either-or world, and we are all invited to take sides. And how have we come to this state of affairs, Felicia?
I think if you have a origin story that's rooted in the Christian tradition, then you likely come to it through what the biblical narrative calls the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which was a split in itself. You had good, you had evil, you had right, you had wrong. And immediately what the story does when we land in it from beginnings of original sin, or we land in it from beginnings of law and the knowledge of good and evil, we parse and we divide and we separate. I think what people miss in Israel's two creation stories is that that story also gave them the tree of life, which was, you know, the law of love. And there was no separation or fragmentation in the law of love. And so it depends on where your origin stories start. I also think when you get into fear and scarcity and certainty and the need for those to feel safe, that it's easy to make decisions, you know, into what's right, what's wrong, this or that, this politic or that party or whatever, and split it just in a way to kind of create a network of safety, which goes back to not even having to do with spirituality, just the way that we ration and our logic and the way we analyze.
Yes, I think you write things are both and. Why are things both and, if that's indeed what you wrote, and I think you did, and are things both and?
Are things both and? I would like to say yes, but I also believe that it's the lens in which we look at it and the way that we frame our world. I think there's an invitation to see both and, for sure. So I think people that are trapped in a lens of polarity and duality, they would say no, it's black or white, it's this or that, it's you have to decide, you know, you need to take a side. And I think there's an invitation of healing that invites us when we look at indigenous practices. All of the way they come to the world is all circular, it's all cyclical, there's a cycle, there's a circle of life, there's a circle dance, you know, the seasons are in a cycle. And I think when we look at the world that way and we come to it, then yes, things are both and. They all go around and they all come around.
Is it important to know that people are wounded, that all of us are wounded in some way?
I think it's important to admit that we are all human. And, there is no one that escapes our humanity. And inside of our humanity, there's a lot of messiness, there's a lot of complexity, there's a lot of good, and there is a lot that needs to be submitted and surrendered to love to be transformed.
How can God's love transform us?
Ah, that's a beautiful thing. I think transformation happens in surrender. I think transformation is like alchemy. It is something that we receive. And so much of religious indoctrination is to do something. We try to produce something. But, I think we have to turn to Mary's Magnificat, the be it unto me according to you. And that is something that we receive.
Now, you're right about America. If I've got the quote written here, I have. We have forgotten our beauty, our strength, and our resiliency, opting instead to discount, deny, and overlook the pain we've wrought on one another. Now, why is that? Why do you think the States has got to, I mean, I'm not an American, I hasten, I'm a New Zealander. I'm an outside observer. But why do you think America has forgotten its beauty and its strength?
Yeah. I'm not really sure, Brent. I wish I had an answer. I go back to I think the narrative of fear has become pervasive. And when we are afraid, we lose the light of love and it dims, and we cannot see each other as sacred. We cannot see each other as burning bushes. We cannot see the wonder. It's much easier to see the wonder in nature than it is sometimes to see it in people,
Yes.
particularly when we're being led by fear.
Is God inviting us, do you think, to savor the beauty of the world around us?
I am a huge believer that we are to participate with love and in our ongoing salvation, both for humanity and for all of creation. How that looks for each individual, I feel like is something that we all have to spend time really quiet listening to our hearts' leanings, our passions, our what's calling to us, how we show up. So I don't think there's a cookie cutter formula to that, but I do believe we're all being invited to participate.
Now, you write quite a lot about the church, and church life hasn't always been easy for you, along with many of us, I suspect. You write, "I'm a product of the church." Now, how and in what ways are you a product of the church?
Well, I've been churched all my life. There's not a time that I don't remember being in somebody's church. My mom was a big prayer person, and she would often spend 4 to 6 hours a day in prayer. And she was one of those hyper religious people that whenever the church doors were open, we were in it. Growing up in a rural town, we did not have church every Sunday because you could not afford a preacher for all Sundays. So 2 Sundays a month, I went to one denominational church with my mother's family, and 2 Sundays a month, I went to another denominational church with my patriarchal side of the family. And then my mother became a born again believer in my early teens, and we started going to a different type of denomination in a different town. So I have been steeped in lots of church denominations, lots of church ways. I raised my kids in the church myself. And so Christianity is my mother tongue. And it took a really an invitation from spirit to hand to God's self all that I believe to be true about God, because I'd heard so many different various interpretations and ideas and doctrines and theologies on God, and for spirit to hand back to me what was true. And what came back to me is love, love in all its forms and the bigness of love. So,
Yes. In what ways have you never really liked church?
I did not like that church was the hellfire and brimstone. I did not like that. Essentially, for me, I felt like I was forced to become saved, and I'm using air quotes, or to say the sinner's prayer to stay out of hell. It was fire insurance. And because there were in the church that I grew up, there was a lot of rules, a lot of don'ts. You couldn't dance, you couldn't, curse, you couldn't smoke, you couldn't drink, you couldn't whatever. It was more that you couldn't do than you could do. And I actually remember being a little girl, and I've always been very close to God's self. So in my quiet, private time, I've always had a really deep relationship with spirit, that really superseded what I was being taught at church. But I remember saying to Jesus once, I love God and I actually want to serve God, but I want to live my life first. I want to have fun, because church wasn't fun. It was just a place with a bunch of rules. And most everyone I knew in church were mean. They were mean people. There was not an expression of love. And they were rule keepers, and they watched you for when you broke the rules to chastise you. And I just didn't see a picture of love. So I was in my 30s before I learned that, that God was a God of love, that there was this being who loved me because God loved me. And, and what that meant really on a big scale, but also very intimately in the transformation of my heart from the person that I was to the person that I am today.
Yes, I think you actually walked away from the church, didn't you, in 2013? Why did you walk away?
Oh, people, church hurts.
Yes, I can relate to that.
Church doesn't hurt you, people do. And wounded people do. I was going to say a bad word, but wounded people do wounding things. They wound. They act out of their fear and out of their scarcity and out of their sense of competition and being threatened. And I grew up in a home that where my father was a Vietnam vet, and he physically abused my mom. So I saw abuse. And because my mom felt powerless to my dad, she in turn abused my brother and myself physically, because that's where she could exert her power. And so I saw how people misuse power under the lie that love hurts. So I'm going to beat you because, that's the way to bring you into a line. And there wasn't physical beating happening in this church, but there was certainly mental abuse. There was certainly some domination and control, and you do what I say and you say it how I want you to say it. And I am grown enough and free enough to say that's a hell no for me. And
Yeah,
so,
I'm into that, sister. Absolutely. You don't need that in your life. No. Is there a place for healthy deconstruction, do you think?
oh, absolutely.
I know
Absolutely.
deconstruction is a fashionable word these days, but you know what I mean, don't you?
I think it's a loaded word these days, unfortunately. But when you read St. John of the Cross, deconstruction is not a new thing. I think that we're all being invited to deconstruct. If we are the same person at the end of our lives that we are in the first half of our life, we have not heeded the invitation to change and grow. And I think it's a valuable thing to deconstruct, or to disentangle ourselves from the scaffolding, to question, whose belief is this? How did I get here? Who had this thought? And why did they have this thought? Whose story is this? And whose voice is missing from this story? And then to step back and to ask spirit, now how does this apply to me? And show me where love shows up in it. So I'm all for it. I think one of the ways that deconstruction has gotten a bad name is when you take fundamentalists and you move a fundamentalist from a fundamental church situation and they deconstruct. They don't lose their fundamentalism. So they just become fundamental about deconstruction. And so over here they were protesting all the things that were bad, and now over here they're just protesting the church, but they're still Protestants. They're still protesting. So
Yes,
that's
yes.
not the invitation that love is inviting us into. So I think we have to reframe this word and what the invitation means for us spiritually and for our evolution.
Yes, final question, I think, Felicia, and then I'm going to ask you, have you got a copy of your book there? Because I was going to ask you to read the, you have a prayer of creativity right at the end of it, which I loved. It's page 282, I've noted it. So,
Okay.
282. You've got a prayer of creativity that I loved. I might ask you to read that at the end, but I've got one more question to slot in before we do, please, if I may. How do our, because this story, this podcast is entitled God's Story Podcast, but I wonder how our stories and other stories weave together.
I hope very beautifully. I think it starts with listening to one another very humbly, with some empathy and compassion, and making space. When we stop centering ourselves in every story, stop looking for ourselves, and allow the person sharing their story to be the center of it, and to recognize that the circle is big enough to be widened, to be broadened, and to listen. And inside of that, I think what you find is there are some points of commonality, even among the distinctions of uniqueness of personhood, where they overlap and they ebb and flow and they weave together. And really, that's the master weaver weaving the beautiful tapestry of humanity, of all of creation, because I think it touches more than just human beings. But as we listen to our story and other stories, we see the weaving happening together for sure.
Let's have a prayer of creativity, please.
Holy Three, you are the master artist. With strokes of love, you painted the world and all therein. Everything came into being through Christ, and apart from love, nothing came into being that has come into being. Together, the Trinity danced upon the deep and created the world. May we look upon ourselves with kindness and respect for your creative genius. May we look upon humanity with awe and reverence as we admire your artistry. May we endeavor to pick up our paintbrushes and join you on the canvas of life to paint harmony where there is tension, unity where there is discord, peace where there is turmoil, love where there is fear. May each stroke connect our hearts to you and to one another. Amen.
Amen to that. Thank you, Felicia, so much. It's been a wonderful half an hour. Bless you. The book, the author is Felicia Murrell, and the book from Whittaker House in the States is called And, The Restorative Power of Love in an Either-Or World. And I loved it simply because it refocused me on the basics.
I'm so glad. Brent, thank you so much for having me. It was a joy to be with you.
Thank you so much, and thanks to our creative team at Liquid Edge who sponsor this podcast and who take care of things behind the scenes. Felicia, thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the God Story Podcast. A huge thank you to all our Patreon supporters who help make this podcast happen. For as little as $5 a month, our supporters get early, ad-free access to all our regular episodes, plus bonus episodes that you won't find anywhere else. Be like them. Just click the Patreon link down in the show notes to visit us at patreon.com/GodStoryPodcast.